Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear reports from Mario Ritter Jr. and Dan Novak. Later, Katie Weaver presents this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. We close the show with the next part of our U.S. History series. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
Police in California are investigating the deadly mass shooting Saturday night in the city of Monterey Park near Los Angeles. The gunman killed 10 people, 5 women and 5 men, in an attack at the Star Ballroom Dance Studio, a dance school. The city has a major Asian American population,and is known for its Lunar New Year's celebration. Traditional dances and a parade had been planned for the first time since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. But officials canceled Sunday's events because of the shooting. Other nearby cities increased security. The police said,They found the body of the gunman, whom they identified as 72-year-old Hu Tan Tran, on Sunday. They said he had shot himself. Police say the gunman went to another dance school in a nearby city after the attack in Monterey Park. However, people disarmed the gunman, and he fled.Los Angeles County Sheriff Robert Luna said a white vehicle, a van, had been seen near one of the attacks, and police launched a search. On Sunday, police found the van with the suspect's body inside. Luna said no other suspects were involved. The gunman's motive,or reason for the attack, remains unclear, Luna said. 10 people were also wounded in the attack. 7 were under hospital care as of Monday. Luna did not release the ages of the victims, but said they all appeared to be over the age of 50. Congressional Representative Judy Chu,spoke at a news conference after the attack. She said she still had questions, but said people in the city should feel safe. The community was in fear, thinking that they should not go to any events because there was an active shooter, Chu said, adding, "You are no longer in danger." The area...has a big Chinese population. The Lunar New Year celebration was expected to bring 100,000 people to the area. The Associated Press, or AP, reports that the mass shooting was the 5th in January. The AP defines a mass shooting as one in which 4 people or more are killed,not including the shooter. The Star Ballroom Dance Studio was holding a Lunar New Year event called Star Night on Saturday. It had advertised the event on its website the day before the shooting. Tony Lai of Monterey Park said he heard sounds the night of the attack but thought they were fireworks.He said he thought the city was very safe. 57-year-old Nguyen Liao said she was shocked that such a crime could happen during the Lunar New Year's celebration. She took a picture of the activity outside the Star Ballroom to send to relatives and friends in China. She said she wanted to let them know how crazy the U.S. is becoming with all these mass shootings, even in the new year. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Scientists in Chile's Patagonia area have found the southernmost dinosaur fossils recorded outside Antarctica. The fossils include remains of megaraptors that would have controlled the area's food chain before their mass extinction. Megaraptors were carnivorous or meat-eating dinosaurs that lived in parts of South America during the Cretaceous period, some 70 million years ago. The fossils were found in sizes up to 10 meters long, said the Journal of South American Earth Sciences. Marcelo Lepe is director of the Chilean Antarctic Institute, or ENAC. "We were missing a piece," he told Reuters. "We knew where there were large mammals, there would also be large carnivores, but we hadn't found them yet." The remains were found in Chile's far south Rio de las Chinas Valley in the Magallanes Basin between 2016 and 2020. The scientists also found some unusual remains of Unenlagia, a velociraptor-like dinosaur, which was likely covered in feathers. The fossils, said University of Chile researcher Jared Amodeo, had some qualities not present in similar remains found in Argentina or Brazil. "It could be a new species, which is very likely, or belong to another family of dinosaurs that are closely related," he said. He added that more evidence is needed. The studies also provide more information on the conditions of the meteorite's impact on Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. That meteorite may have led to the dinosaur's extinction some 65 million years ago. Lepe pointed to a large decrease in temperatures over present-day Patagonia and waves of severe cold lasting up to several thousands of years. The climate, however, was very warm for much of the Cretaceous period. "This world was already in crisis before the meteorite, and this is evidenced in the rocks of the Rio de las Chinas Valley," he said. I'm Dan Novak.
Ever seen a tree covered in parts with green growth and wondered what it was? Were you concerned that the spreading green life might hurt the tree? Well, no need to worry. Those growths could be lichens, moss, or algae, and none of them threaten the tree's health. They are not parasites. Lichens are symbiotic organisms of fungi, algae, and possibly yeast. The organisms spread on the tree, but they do not live off it. They live off each other, and they all favor trees that are sick or growing in poor conditions. The growth usually presents as pale green or gray, but sometimes even orange. The growth is normally crusty or leafy masses on tree branches and trunks. The growth of lichens is actually a sign of good environmental health, as they will not survive in polluted areas. If lichens are present, the air quality in the area must be good. But it also tells you that the tree was sick enough to appeal to lichens. So you might want to give the tree some extra healing care. Water the tree, aerate the soil around it, and place mulch along the root zone. That area begins 10 centimeters away from the trunk. It extends as far as the branches above reach out. Moss is another non-parasitic organism that thrives in wettish conditions and grows on trees, among other things. It likes shady areas. Moss grows in green or yellow mats. It favors low soil fertility, acidic pH levels, and dense soil. In most cases, moss growth is harmless. But if the growth becomes very large, its weight could damage branches. To limit moss growth on a tree, remove branches in the center of the canopy. This will permit more sunlight and better airflow. You can also gently scrape the moss off the tree. You can also remove it with a chemical that kills fungi. Algae is usually considered a water plant. However, it can also grow on trees, paths, roofs, fences, and houses. Like moss, it likes shade and some wetness. Algae's green or orange covering can be washed away with a powerful water hose. You can also create a wash solution that can slow algae growth. Mix about 30 milliliters of chlorine bleach or white vinegar with about 3.7 liters of water. Apply the solution directly on the algae. It is not necessary to remove algae from trees, but you can if you want. Just spray affected areas with 5 grams of copper sulfate mixed into 30 milliliters of water. The algae will likely regrow in the area, however, if shady, wettish conditions remain in place. I'm Katie Weaver.
You just heard this week's Health and Lifestyle Report, presented by Katie Weaver. Katie joins me now to talk more about the story. Hi, Katie. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Ashley. My pleasure.
Today, Katie, I wanted to ask you about lichen. Well, actually, just the spelling and pronunciation of the word lichen.
I know where you are going with this. The spelling is L-I-C-H-E-N. The double consonant of C-H is pronounced with a K sound in this case. Other words with a K sounding C-H include chemical, technology, and school. Those words should be more familiar to our listeners.
They are in the Learning English Wordbook. So are teach, change, cheat, and rich, which also have the CH combination. Can you choose some examples that may help us understand when to use the k sound and when to use the ch sound?
Sure. The k sound is usual in words with a Greek history. A lot of English words linked to science and medicine came from the Greek language. The ch in those cases is pronounced k because it represents the Greek letter chi.
What other ways can ch be pronounced in English words?
Sometimes it will have a sh sound, as in machine. That sound means the word probably came from the French language. Ch will sound like ch, as in teach, rich, and choose, in words developed from Germanic languages.
Well, cheers to that, Katie, and thanks for the chat.
It was charming.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the years just after the Civil War, America was led by Andrew Johnson. The Democrat rose from vice president to president when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated in April of 1865. Andrew Johnson soon found himself in a bitter struggle with Congress. In 1868, radical members of the Republican Party held a trial in the Senate. They tried to remove the president from office. But they could not prove their charges, and their effort failed by one vote. When the trial was over, Johnson had less than a year left in office. He retired to his home in Tennessee. By then, Americans had elected a new president. Larry West and Shep O'Neill tell the story of the election of 1868.
There was no question about the Republican choice for president. Party leaders wanted General Ulysses Grant. Grant had been head of the Union Army during the last part of the Civil War. Under his leadership, the Union had won, and now he was the best-liked man in the country. Wherever Grant went, former soldiers waited to shake the hand of the man who had led them to victory against the Confederacy. The Democratic Party had a much more difficult time choosing a candidate for president in 1868. 47 men wanted the nomination. After several votes during its convention, the party failed to choose one above the others. Finally, party leaders looked for a compromise candidate. They chose Horatio Seymour, a former governor of New York State. He won the nomination on the 22nd ballot. Seymour, at first, said he could not accept the honor. He said he did not want to be president. But finally, after much urging from other party leaders, he agreed to run against Grant.
The presidential campaign was a strange one. Neither Grant nor Seymour campaigned very hard. Grant told his advisers he would take no part in the election campaign. Seymour spent much of the time working on his farm. The real campaigning was done by party supporters. Republicans urged Union men to vote as you shot for Ulysses Grant, the man who won the Civil War. They warned that Horatio Seymour and the Democrats were all secret rebels in their hearts. Seymour's supporters spent most of their time answering Republican charges. They struck back by accusing Grant of being a liar. They said he was controlled by extremists. They said he would rule from the White House like a dictator.
The Democratic attacks failed. Grant got more popular votes and electoral votes than Seymour. He won the election. It was a great victory for the military hero. Yet it also was the start of an administration that would suffer many problems. Ulysses Grant would prove to be much less successful in politics than in war. As Andrew Johnson prepared to leave the White House a few months after Grant's election, he would look back on some successes during his time as president. True, he had lost the political fight to control the rebuilding or reconstruction of the defeated southern states, but he had won the equally important fight to keep the presidency independent from Congress. Johnson also could look back on some successes in foreign relations. During his administration, he got Napoleon III of France to withdraw French forces from Mexico, and he got more territory for the United States.
In the spring of 1867, the Russian minister in Washington made a surprise offer. He said his country was willing to sell some of its territory in North America. Secretary of State William Seward quickly prepared a treaty accepting the offer. Russia wanted $10 million for the land. Seward said the United States would pay only $7 million. Russia accepted, and the treaty was signed. The United States flag was raised over Alaska. Many Americans protested the purchase of Alaska. They thought $7 million was too much to pay for a worthless piece of frozen land. They said the deal was foolish. They called it Seward's folly. In time, of course, these critics were proved wrong. Alaska's wealth in oil, natural gas, trees, fish, and animal skins makes its purchase one of the greatest deals any country ever made for territory.
On March 4th, 1869, Ulysses Grant traveled to Washington for his inauguration as the 18th President of the United States. Outgoing President Andrew Johnson refused to take part in the ceremony. Before Grant arrived, Johnson left the White House. As he walked out, he told a friend, "I think I can already smell the fresh mountain air of my home in Tennessee." Americans had high hopes for their new president. They saw Grant as a strong and silent soldier, a great leader who had won a long and bitter war. But there was another side to Grant which most people did not see. During the Civil War, the general had been a great hero. For many years before that, however, he had been considered a failure.
As a young man, Grant entered West Point, the nation's school for Army officers. He did poorly in his studies. He did not like responsibility. Somehow, he completed his studies and became an Army officer. He fought in America's war against Mexico. After the war, Grant got into trouble. He drank too much whiskey, too often. The Army forced him to resign. For the next 8 years, he tried one thing after another. He failed at each one. He tried farming, for example, and failed. He tried selling land, and failed at that, too. At last, Grant appealed to his father for a job in a store. He held this low-paying job until the Civil War started. Then he finally got back into the Army. He got his chance to succeed.
Still, the years of poverty and failure affected Ulysses Grant. They made him lack trust in his own judgment and abilities. This feeling showed itself when Grant reached the White House. The new president had little knowledge of politics or government, and he refused to ask for advice from experts. To do so, he felt, would show a lack of intelligence. For advice, he depended on close friends. These were the men with whom he had served during the Civil War. Grant had never been able to make much money. He liked and had great respect for men who had. He became friends with some of these wealthy men. He accepted gifts from them. This weakness for money and power became clear when he announced his choices for his cabinet.
Grant named a rich businessman to be Treasury Secretary. The Senate rejected him. Grant named another rich businessman for Navy Secretary. This nomination was approved, even though the man had never been on a ship. Grant named several other rich people and old military friends to the cabinet. Many lacked political experience. Some critics attacked the appointments. One critic said, "Never was an administration begun with more hope and less ability."
The best advisor Grant named was John Rawlins as Secretary of War. Rawlins was a good judge of men, and he was wiser than most of Grant's other friends. He alone, of all those around the president, would argue with Grant when he believed him to be wrong. Rawlins, however, was in poor health. His condition grew worse during the summer of 1869. Early in autumn, he died. Rawlins' death hurt President Grant deeply. But the lack of honest, wise advice in the White House would hurt the country even more. That will be our story in the next program of The Making of a Nation.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.